Hi, I'm Mitch Hanley, senior producer for Speaking of Faith. A couple of weeks ago, when we were taping Krista's interview with novelist and retired paleoanthropologist Mary Daria Russell, the conversation briefly touched on some of her musical tastes. Intrigued by what I had heard, I did some further research and learned that, growing up, Mary Daria Russell was the kind of kid who liked The Stones better than the Beatles, Beethoven better than Mozart, and orchestral music better than string quartets. These days, she says, her calm, well-ordered, and intensely bourgeois life apparently continues to seek refuge in large-scale, emotionally charged musical productions. As someone who was coming of age in the 80s, I was surprised to learn that Ms. Russell, who is approaching 60, is quite a fan of what she calls the big hair bands of those days, and even claims to have, quote, worn the oxide off her cassette copy of Def Leppard's 1986 release, Hysteria. So I decided to give her a call, hoping that we might get a little deeper insight into the musical affections of a well-ordered novelist, affections that include Beethoven, Chopin, and Puccini, but also Van Halen, and, of course, Def Leppard. You know, as a novelist whose medium is language, let me just recite some of these these lines to you. I just... Love is like a bomb, baby.
Come on, get it on.
Come and get it on. Yeah. You know these words. Living like a lover with a radar phone. Looking like a tramp, like a video vamp.
Like a video vamp.
Can you do the next line?
No.
Demolition
no.
Woman.
Demolition Woman, can I be your man? I believe that Elliot has said that they basically just do a string of words for their lyrics.
And Elliot is the lyricist for Def Leppard?
Okay. Yes, he's also the lead singer.
Okay.
And they don't put a whole lot of time into their lyrics.
But you're okay with that?
Yeah, I'm okay with that. You know, I never looked the words up to the songs until years after I had listened to it. You know, because it's not poetry.
Oh, really? I thought you might defend it.
No, I'm not going to defend that. Are you kidding?
Well.
No, it's fist in the air, head banging music.
Well, we can't always choose our inspiration, right?
That's right. And I'm not saying that I am necessarily inspired by Def Leppard. I just love their music. That's all.
Okay. This is from The Sparrow. Mm-hmm. Later, Didar Yarbrough would recall how Alan Pace had given such a great deal of thought to the music he would first present to represent human culture. The subtle mathematical joys of a Bach cantata, the thrilling harmonies of the sextet from Lucia de Lammermoor, the quiet, evocative beauties of Cézanne, the majesty of a Beethoven symphony, the inspired perfection of a Mozart quartet, all of these had been considered. And at this point in the story, it's Alan has passed away.
Yeah.
And so it's George here who actually picks the music. And it says here, George, who'd shared much of Alan's eclectic taste, had picked out the music that was playing over the Landers sound system as Supari
Vagajur
approached them. And while Alan would not have selected this particular piece to introduce human music to Rakat, what Supari heard was in fact something Alan Pace had reveled in, the rhythmic power, soaring vocals, and instrumental virtuosity, not of Beethoven's Ninth, but of Van Halen's arena rock masterpiece, 5150. The cut, Anne would remember afterward, was appropriate. The song playing was Best of Both Worlds. So now, one could read that and easily just think, well, you know, they know about Van Halen, but this sounds like a real fan.
Oh, sure.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that 5150 was an album that I had on for most of the time that I was writing The Sparrow.
Uh as a Van Halen fan, now, are you on the Van Halen side of the divide or the Van Hagar?
Sammy. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Because, you know, he was able to do the Diamond Dave songs and make them his own. Mm-hmm. But there was something wonderfully joyous and crazy about Sammy Hagar. I really liked him as their front man.
Yeah. You see, I'm more of a Diamond Dave guy.
Okay.
I mean,
I don't dislike Diamond Dave.
Yeah.
But.
I mean, well, it, for example, and though I don't know exactly what David Lee Roth is saying here, but in this one, I mean, you know, he's got all those great screams in there too. You know?
Oh yes.
Jump back, what's that sound? Here she comes, full blast and top down. Hot shoe, burning down the avenue. Model citizen, zero discipline. Don't you know she's coming home with me? You lose her in the turn, I'll get her. Panama, Panama. Now.
Panama.
There you go.
I listened to music in the car for the most part. For Children of God, it was Robbie Robertson's first solo album. And the cut on that one that I just kept coming back to was Testimony, which seemed to just wrap up where my main character, Emilio Sandoz, was. With A Thread of Grace, there was a lot of opera in that. So the very famous aria that Luciano Pavarotti made so familiar to so many people, Nessun Dorma, No One Sleeps. And I thought that was quite wonderful for a group of boys who were in the partisan armed anti-fascist resistance. Mm-hmm. And they were often on sentry duty by themselves. And so no one sleeps. And then it ends with Vinciro. We will, you know, I will triumph. I will conquer. So that had a lot of resonance. The fourth book, there was very little music in that. Mm. And I think that's probably, it's an outlier, that book, in a lot of ways. It's the least like the other ones that I've done.
But you do draw a line between the big arena rock guitar solos of Def Leppard and Van Halen and the subject of your current novel, Doc Holliday. Now, can you tell me about that?
Oh, well, only the fact that the connection for me is that my personal taste tends towards 1980s hair bands. I do like Fist in the Air, heavy metal. The big massed sounds, the wall of sound that you get from that era of rock music. And a lot of that, for me, the emotional response to it is very similar to what I get when listening to these big massed sounds of Beethoven symphonies.
Epic pieces,
yeah. Arena rock, and, you know, I mean, Beethoven is he's pretty much a rocker himself. You know?
Sure,
there's
sure.
A lot of rock sensibility there.
And maybe had the same lifestyle.
Yeah, exactly. And the willingness to do what he wanted to do when he wanted to do it, and apologize to nobody for nothing. You know?
That's right.
So I don't know that he ever would have thrown a television out of a hotel room, but he was capable of it, I feel quite sure.
Perhaps a harpsichord.
What really surprised me was that I fell in love with Chopin. And that was the influence of Doc Holliday. I had to get my head around the things that he would have known. And he was a classically educated man of the 19th century. Mm. He spoke fluent French. He read in Greek and Latin. He was extremely well-educated, and he played classical piano. So it was my job to make myself familiar with the 19th century classical piano repertoire that he would have been familiar with.
Mm.
And what surprised me was finding moments of instrumentals from the 1980s rock bands that I admired and enjoyed, and seeing them kind of echoing the music of the 19th century. There was so much emotion in the piano repertoire of that time. It's not Mozart. It's not mathematical. It's not Bach. There's a lot of headbanging, for lack of a better term,
sure.
that goes into that. And also the sheer virtuosity of it, the sheer physical ability to make the fingers carry out these extraordinarily rapid and intricate runs.
And just as a final question here, now you are a novelist, but you're also a paleoanthropologist.
Mm-hmm.
And
Retired. Recovering.
Okay. And, you know, many listeners could probably guess what that means, but how would you describe that work, just briefly?
The quick definition is stones and bones.
Okay.
It's about the evolution of the human species. And my expertise was primarily focused on Neanderthals.
Okay. Now, generations from now, what would paleoanthropologists who might come across an ossuary or a time capsule containing things like large aerosol cans of Aquanet and brightly colored spandex, lots of leather, possibly rouge and eyeliner. What conclusions might they draw about the age of 1980s arena rock? This is a serious question.
Oh, my. I'm not sure I could come up with it.
I mean, you're talking about the evolution of a species.
Clearly, gender roles were becoming somewhat blurred.
It's maybe too soon to say we've evolved from that period.
No, I think that's yes.